Welcome to the Hoopsite Podcast. My name is Alex Kennedy. This is episode number 213. We post new episodes every Monday and Thursday, so be sure to check back each week. Joining me today is director Yemi Bamiro, whose new Michael Jordan documentary, One Man and His Shoes, premieres tonight on Vice TV at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Yemi, thanks for joining me. How are you?
I'm really good. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you.
Yeah, I mean, I have to tell you, this documentary was excellent. I highly recommend it to everyone. It's about how Michael Jordan was marketed, the rise of Air Jordans, and the sneakerhead culture that they've kind of created. And I really enjoyed it. I'm not just telling you that because you're here, but I loved watching it. I watched it last night with my family, and we were all just loving it. How did this documentary idea come together, and when did you start working on it?
Firstly, thank you. I'm really glad that you enjoyed it. In terms of the process, I started thinking about it as far back as 2012, but I didn't actually start making it until 2013. My entry point, you know, into the film was Air Jordan collectors. I basically wanted to tell a feature-length film about, you know, collectors, you know, understanding why they're so obsessive, why they're so committed, why they're so passionate. And I sort of started to make that film for perhaps a year, but I had this feeling, I had this voice that perhaps I needed a little bit more to sort of sustain over sort of like a feature length duration, a running time of a film. So I just kind of figured that perhaps once you've seen one collector, you've seen two collectors, you kind of get the idea that they're, you know, hugely passionate and committed. And then I also was just kind of like, I didn't know how cinematic it was because, you know, you could easily just go onto YouTube and see people that collect Jordans or sneakers or whatever. So then I started to think about where else we could go with the story. And then I started to think about the phenomenon of Air Jordan sneakers. I started to think about, you know, everything that predated the collectors. You know, I wanted to sort of like understand how the Jordan collaboration with Nike happened, you know, because it proved to be the blueprint for sort of everything that we have now in terms of like sports brands and athletes. So that's pretty much what I became fascinated with and obsessed with over the next 6 years, just getting together the men and women who were responsible for sort of marketing Michael Jordan from the perspective of Nike. You know, I wanted the people who were in the room, the people that were there, that were, you know, part of the negotiations, the people that were doing the deals. And yeah, that's pretty much the film that we kind of like have made. You know, it's pretty much the phenomenon of the sneaker, kind of like warts and all.
Yeah, and it was super interesting. And I mean, you interviewed David Stern, Sonny Vaccaro, David Falk, Nike designers, you know, Nike executives. There were a lot of sports writers in there. How many interviews did you do, and what was that process like?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't actually remember how many interviews I did. I need to think about that. It must have been more than 15. Maybe 20 interviews in total. Obviously, there's people that just like didn't make the cut, or, you know, because we just wanted to keep the narrative like really, really coherent and really quite focused. We didn't really want any fat. We kind of like wanted to stick to the script as much as possible. And, you know, we had some amazing contributors, but for one reason or the other, you know, including them perhaps would have meant that we would have went off on a tangent. So I think it was in excess of perhaps 20 interviews. In terms of the process, it was a long process. Obviously, I kind of like live in London, and this is an independent film. We made this independently, me and my two producers. And it was kind of, you know, we all work in TV, that's our day job. So we would sort of like make a little bit of money in our day jobs, and then sort of like the money that we did make, we'd put it into the film. So that was sort of the process. And then also, you know, not everyone that you're going to ask is always going to want to be in your documentary. You know, you sometimes you have to convince people, you kind of like have to sell it to people. And there was a fair amount of that, you know, like just to convince people that, you know, that we kind of wanted to tell this story in the right way, you know, because I'm sure kind of over the years, the contributors that we have managed to get in the film, I'm sure they've been approached by people to sort of like make documentaries, but I just kind of never wanted to give up, you know, perhaps when someone told me that they weren't interested, I just kind of like would leave it 6 months and then go back. So yeah, that's pretty much how it was made in terms of the interviews.
I feel like the timing is perfect too. Obviously right now The Last Dance came out, everyone's talking about it, and I feel like Jordan is kind of on everyone's mind right now, and they touched on the Air Jordans and his marketing a little bit, but they didn't really go in depth like this documentary does. But do you feel like One Man in His Shoes is a nice compliment or follow-up to The Last Dance?
Yeah, I think timing is everything. And, you know, it looks like we kind of like planned this and we literally had no idea that this was ever going to happen. I think, you know, the film was meant to premiere in March at South by Southwest Film Festival in Austin. And then obviously coronavirus meant that the festival got cancelled. So we've got like an amazing sales agent. So I think after the cancellation, she just continued to sort of like knock on doors and talk to people. And then we sort of like found out that, you know, this kind of like this mammoth, which is The Last Dance, was obviously it had been moved up because it was meant to come out in June and they moved it. And yeah, it was just timing, and it was just complete, you know, we got really lucky with it. It wasn't planned at all. In terms of whether or not I feel it's a companion piece to the ESPN series, I'm not entirely sure because I haven't seen a single frame of The Last Dance. I've been so preoccupied with this film and sort of like everything, you know, we've kind of been rushing to sort of like deliver it to the network, and that's been quite a lot of work, and we've sort of like had to pivot off of our original kind of like plan. So I haven't seen it, but I'm really looking forward to sort of like jumping into it. But pretty much everyone I know who has seen it and they have said that, you know, I think the film is going to be a good companion piece because of the fact that we really delve deep into sort of like the way that Michael Jordan was marketed from a sports perspective in relation to Nike. So, yeah.
Yeah, they briefly touch on the marketing and, you know, him wanting to be at Adidas, but then eventually going to Nike and some things like that. But it's very different. You know, it was very light, whereas yours dives very deep. So, yeah, I felt like even though I just watched The Last Dance, I still learned a lot from your documentary. So I feel like anyone that finished The Last Dance and wants more MJ content, they should definitely watch this. You're not going to feel like you're hearing the same stuff over and over again. You know, it's all new content. So that worked out well. I'm sure the last thing you wanted was, I'm sure, to put years and years into this, and then, you know, they cover all the same stuff, so that worked out nicely. Yeah,
exactly, because I knew that it was coming. I knew about it a few years ago that it was coming, and I think that perhaps it was meant to come out in 2019 and it didn't. So I always imagined that we would be quite, you know, far off down the line by the time that it sort of like came out. But yeah, life has a way of kind of, you know, messing with your plans.
For sure. Let's talk about that for a second. The fact that Jordan wanted to sign with Adidas, had zero interest in Nike, didn't even want to see the Nike campus whenever they invited him. In the documentary, a Nike designer you talked to said that years later he asked Adidas, you know, why didn't you sign MJ? And they said they had no idea who he was at that time. You know, how badly is Adidas kicking themselves these days?
I think, yeah, obviously, you know, the luxury of hindsight, yeah, I guess they will be kicking themselves. I think that, you know, I thought about this a lot, and I just kind of feel that MJ and Nike was the perfect marriage. You know, I think you have, it's almost like the best and the best just completely they came together completely, you know, unknowingly, and they created what they created. I think Nike, you know, they're a marketing company that sells sportswear, and they're incredible at what they do, and we've seen that over the years. And you know, they bet the farm on MJ being who, you know, who MJ eventually turned out to be. So I think that, I just think it was the foresight of Nike. And you know, and I think a lot of credit goes to sort of like the guys in the room at the time, you know, Rob Strasser, Sonny Vaccaro, David Falk, you know, Jordan's mum. Like, I think, you know, there was a lot of people that sort of engineered it and sort of had an inkling that it was going to work out in the way that it did.
Yeah, you spoke with Sonny Vaccaro, and it's a testament to his ability to evaluate talent. The fact that Adidas hadn't even heard of this guy, and Sonny was saying, give him a signature shoe and go all in on this kid from a marketing perspective. You talk to Sonny and, you know, get into the role he played in all of this. Not only was he getting a ton of college teams to wear Nikes, he was able to secure Jordan and, you know, really push them to go all in on Jordan, as you mentioned. As someone said in the documentary, there's no Jordan brand without Sonny. You know, what was your interview with him like, and can you kind of speak to the impact that he had?
Yeah, Sonny's an amazing man, and it took me the best part of 2 years to get Sonny on board, to get Sonny on camera. And you know, I always knew that it would be really difficult to tell this story without him, because you know, he's like folklore. It's just like, you know, Sonny Vaccaro was one of the architects, and I always knew that, you know, I desperately wanted him in the film. So I kind of just kept knocking and knocking and knocking. I'd like pop up every 6 months and ask him, and then I think eventually I was in America on a different job, and I just basically randomly just messaged him, and he was just like, yeah, let's make it happen. So that was, I actually interviewed him twice. That was the first time, I think, in 2016. And then I interviewed him again last year, and he's an amazing man. Like, he's just across everything. He's, you know, he's so sharp, and he's just got so many stories. So it was an honor to speak to him and to spend time with him and his wife Pam, and they're just like lovely lovely people, and they were so generous with their time, you know. And it, you know, he's a legend in his own right.
Yeah, he has an incredible eye for talent. The NBA banned the Jordan 1s because there was a rule that players could only wear white shoes. Jordan was fined $5,000 every time he wore the red and white black Jordan 1s. Nike had the excellent idea of promoting that, that they were banned by the NBA, you know, kind of saying they were almost a performance-enhancing shoe. That was what they were almost hinting at. Did the NBA accidentally help create this phenomenon?
100%, I don't think there's any accidental in it. I think, you know, David Stern, who's no longer with us, unfortunately, he was a game changer. He was an incredible marketeer. He understood, you know, where the game was going. He understood the appeal, the increasing appeal and demand of the sport, and you know, he kind of like, he knew what he had in Jordan, and he knew how precious, you know, Michael Jordan was to the NBA as a business. So I think, and how important Nike were in as a result as well. So I think, you know, a lot of credit needs to go to sort of, you know, David Stern's role in manipulating that and engineering that, and just being an architect at that, just being really shrewd and being really savvy. And you know, seeing things before, you know, they actually kind of like happened. I think a lot of credit goes to David for that.
For sure. As part of Jordan's endorsement deal with Nike, his agent David Falk negotiated that Air Jordans would have a substantial marketing budget. You know, Jordan's play obviously helped sell these shoes and make them blow up, but Nike did a great job promoting them, you know, promoting the banned shoes, having the Spike Lee commercials. And you kind of mentioned this, you know, they're a marketing company that sells sneakers and sports clothes. How much did Nike's marketing help this, you know, Air Jordan phenomenon blow up?
Well, I mean, you know, like DJ Clark Kent says that, you know, if you didn't have Spike Lee, you know, like it's hard to understand where this all is. You know, Jordan would be Jordan, but I think the marketing was groundbreaking. You'd never seen, you'd never seen adverts like that. You'd never seen commercials like that. And, you know, we kind of compare and contrast what Converse were doing with some of their ads and what some of the other brands were doing. And it was nowhere on the money as sort of like what Nike were doing and what Spike Lee was doing as well. And I think, again, you know, if you're talking about architects and you're talking about people that were actually who played a huge role in that, you know, you have to give a lot of credit to Wieden and Kennedy and Jim Riswold. You know, these guys, they came up with these ideas and they had these plans, and, you know, they didn't know they were going to work, but they were bold enough to sort of like give them a go. And then, you know, we have, you know, some of the greatest basketball commercials ever. Like, I don't think those commercials will ever be topped. They're just so incredible, you know, to see Michael Jordan in that way and to see Spike in the way that he was as well as Mars. I think it, you know, it was just perfect. It was perfect marketing. It was perfect timing. And, you know, Jordan was obviously the perfect athlete.
For sure. One thing that Jamel Hill and Scoop Jackson mentioned in your documentary is that Jordan created the blueprint for other superstar athletes when it comes to endorsements and marketing. I feel like that's a big part of MJ's legacy. You know, guys like Kobe Bryant and LeBron James wouldn't have had the same endorsements and, you know, signature shoes and all of that stuff had they not been able to follow that blueprint. Would you agree with that?
100%. And I don't think that's just... I don't think that's just confined to basketball players. In my opinion, MJ was the blueprint for everything. I think, you know, where would we have a Tiger Woods? Would we have a David Beckham? Would we have, you know, all of these huge global icons who have, you know, had their respective kind of like endorsement deals? I think that it all starts with MJ. It all starts with MJ and Nike. You know, that was the blueprint and that was the foundation. Obviously, within his respective field of basketball, yeah, of course, it kind of like it opened the floodgates for everything. But I think just on a sporting level, I think other sports looked to sort of like what they did as a collaboration and thought, you know, we can have an icon, we can have a figurehead, and we can have someone that sort of like we can build our business on. And I think that's what, you know, I think MJ and Nike are a great advert for that.
Yeah, and you get into the rise of sneakerhead culture. You show DJ Clark Kent's collection of Air Jordans, Wheaties boxes, Gatorades. I mean, he had over 1,000 pairs of Jordans, $1 million insurance policy on his collection. And we'll get into, you know, that sneakerhead culture in a second. But what was it like, you know, seeing his massive collection and, you know, going there to shoot those interviews?
Yeah, so that collection, that wasn't Clark Kent. That was a Jumpman Bostic. So he's out of Detroit. And yeah, he's incredible. I mean, his basement is basically like a museum. It's like a time capsule because it's just not sneakers. It's like you say, it's Wheaties boxes. It's like Gatorade. He's got everything. And I think hanging out with him and talking to him, you know, he's pretty much dedicated his life to doing that, you know, and it's commitment beyond belief. And he doesn't get stuff free. He buys everything. I don't know how he does it, but he's just a passionate and sort of like enthusiastic collector. And, you know, I actually hung out with him twice. I interviewed him twice. And the first time was in a house in Detroit in his basement. And when I caught up again with him, maybe like 2 or 3 years later, he'd moved to a bigger house and he'd obviously accumulated more sneakers. So the basement was like bigger, and it's like a museum, you know, it's fascinating. And you know, those guys really take it seriously.
Yeah, and you talk about how it's an addiction, and for some people, it's gotten out of control. You know, when we see people trampling each other and fighting over shoes, or, you know, even murdering others for their shoes, which you know, document, it's clearly gotten out of control in those regards. When did that start happening, where it, you know, really got to that level where people started getting killed and, you know, kind of getting crazy?
I think you can sort of like trace that back to sort of like 89, maybe 90, 1990. I think we all remember sort of like the sneaker crimes of sort of like the late 80s and the 90s. And I think that was really well documented with the Sports Illustrated Rick Ted Lander piece, Your Sneakers All Your Life, which he talks about in the film. But I think that what the film will hopefully shine a light on is that the fact that these things still happen, you know, they weren't just confined to sort of like the 80s or the 90s. I think that, you know, kids are still selling Jordans on eBay and then going to meet the people who they think of who want to purchase the sneakers, and then, you know, violence ensues or like incidents happen. And I think it's just something that has continued to happen given how much these sneakers mean to people. And, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily going to change. You know, I think they are status symbols and they are jewels in communities. And I feel that I don't know if that's necessarily going to change, but you know, you start thinking about the here and the why and why did this happen? And I think that's such a bigger, you need a bigger canvas to jump into all that stuff. That's like socioeconomics. That's like it's American policy. It's, you know, it's loads of other things that we didn't have the capacity to sort of, you know, explore in the film, nor did we ever have that intention to do. But yeah, you know, we just wanted to sort of like document the history of the Air Jordan sneaker. And unfortunately the violence is, you know, part of the sneaker's history.
Right. And I mean, you do talk to a mother who lost her son, Joshua Woods, because he was murdered for his Jordans. And it's heartbreaking. Michael Jordan sent the family a pair of unreleased shoes as if, you know, that helps. And the mother was upset. You know, she invited Michael Jordan and people from Nike to come to the funeral, but, you know, that didn't happen. Do you feel Nike and Jordan Brand have a responsibility to try to fix this? Because, I mean, at the end of the day, it is artificial scarcity.
Yeah, like, I think I spoke to a lot of parents, mothers and fathers whose lives had been changed forever as a result of like sneaker violence. And I think, you know, they were quite clear with that, you know, they didn't blame like the brand. They don't blame Jordan. They don't necessarily blame Nike. But I think what really aggrieved them is that, you know, they just never, they wanted the brand to sort of like take a stand and to speak out and to sort of like condemn the behavior and condemn, you know, the sense, how senseless it is for those crimes to happen. And I think, you know, I spent a lot of time with Daisy and that's all she ever really wanted. She almost like an acknowledgement that this stuff does happen. And, you know, what happened to her son is very real. You know, I was there for a number of years with her and I saw that that is the reality of, you know, senseless violence over something ridiculous. So yeah, in terms of like culpability, you know, like Nike didn't put, you know, handguns in kind of like, you know, people's hands and then go and tell them to rob sneakers. No, of course not. I don't think that's right. But I think an acknowledgement, you know, and just to sort of, you know, to actually speak out and to be vocal and to sort of like to sort of like acknowledge and condemn, I think that wouldn't have gone amiss in quite a few of these cases.
Yeah, I agree. You know, addressing it could definitely help. And I know you reached out to Nike and Jordan Brand and they didn't respond to your interview request, right?
Yeah, we did reach out to them because obviously my entry point into this film was, you know, to tell the story of this sneaker, a celebration of this sneaker, a history of this sneaker, sort of like a definitive story that documents the life of the sneaker. And, you know, there are people who are at the company now who were there in the beginning, so obviously I wanted to talk to them. But yeah, we just didn't hear back. And like I said, you know, not everyone you ask is going to be in your documentary. We're an independent outfit, you know, a bunch of filmmakers from London. It didn't surprise me that I didn't hear back, but that wasn't going to stop us. You know, we still had a story that we wanted to tell and we were going to tell it.
And you did a great job telling it. I mean, I would highly recommend everyone check out One Man in His Shoes. It is premiering on May 25th. That's Monday at 8 p.m. on Vice TV. We can include some of the details in the description, too, so you can know where to watch it and everything. But Yemi, thank you so much for joining me, man. I really appreciate you taking time. I know things are crazy right now, so thanks for making time to do this.
No worries. Thank you so much for taking time to talk to me, and I'm so glad that you liked the film. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to hearing this.
Yes. Yeah, you did a fantastic job on the film and today. So we appreciate that. Everyone, make sure you check out One Man and His Shoes Monday on Vice TV. Again, we'll have a link and some details in the description if you want to know where you can watch it. And if you guys want to hear more episodes of the Hoops Hype Podcast, check us out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere podcasts are found. And until next time, thanks for listening.